Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 353. And we ended up last time with 1 Chronicles 23, where David is preparing in detail all the divine service, all the parts and pieces that each one, you know, the Levites had in it, musicians, judges, everything else. And so we read in terms of their service in verse 31 of 1 Chronicles 23. Read here. And at every presentation of a burnt offering to the Eternal, on the Sabbath, and on the new moons, and on the set feasts, by number according to the ordinance governing them, regularly before the Lord. In other words, as we read here in the earlier verse, verse 30, the task of the priest, of the Levites, especially in the Levites here, verse 30, to stand every morning, to thank and praise the Eternal, and likewise at evening. So this was the morning sacrifice and the evening sacrifice. In other words, when the sacrifices were being offered, the musicians were there also on hand, whether the entirety of the 4,000 of them or not. You have to go to the Mishnah to find that out. But they were there, playing the music. And then also, as it adds here, at the presentation, as we just read, of the burnt offering to the Lord, on the Sabbath, the new moons, and the set feast. So, you see oftentimes this three included there. And therefore, the new moon was quite understood in Israel as a day that was to be celebrated, where sacrifices to be offered, where a meal was going to be partaken of by the entirety of the family, where they had a sacrifice. You see, they generally did not eat meat, a lot of meat. They ate vegetables, grain, things like that. But on special occasions, like a new moon, so that is 12 times a year, they offered a sacrifice beside the other holidays and the time that, you know, they went to the tabernacle or whatever other needs they had when they went to the tabernacle to bring special offerings. But a new moon was one of them. So it was quite a prominent celebration in the culture and the religion in the nation of Israel. It was not something that was obscure to them. And yet it became as time went by. You know, when knowledge began to disappear, and especially from people that had departed from the law a long time ago, and even in the Jewish community gradually, because there was no temple anymore and things were different as they were taken to exile, so gradually even the new moon began to lose a little bit of its meaning. As a matter of fact, a lot of its meaning. And how much spiritual knowledge and understanding they had, that depended on the leaders that they had. Sometimes they had leaders that had more understanding, sometimes leaders who had less. At times, you know, they had men like Elijah or Elisha or other prophets who had more knowledge and understanding, or, you know, righteous people. And so that was sort of an on and off. And yet, for those who do study the subject, and generally speaking, the Orthodox community, in every synagogue, to this very day, every single month, it is announced, and there is a special service that is included in the prayer about the new moon. And there are certain psalms that are being read there. They are called the Hallel, the songs of praise, that were sung by the Levites on the new moon. And so that part is still there. So the service is still being observed to this very day. You see? How many go home and have a special meal, a service, whatever it may be? Well, that depends on the individual families. But the new moon has not departed from the knowledge and the religion and the culture of Judah to this very day. You see? That's what Christ was saying to his own people who are all Jews. And to the people that were going to now become his followers and those who are going to follow them, or the Gentiles. Unless your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, you know, the scribes or whatever, you see, you aren't going to be there. That's all there is to it. And the Pharisees to this very day, the followers of the Pharisees, there are no Pharisees today, in terms of that movement that was at the time, it was actually a special sect and had, I understand, about 6,000 members or something like that. The rest of the people were not, they were just followers of that sect, of that group. And they follow their teachings. but they do it to this very day. So that righteousness is still there. And so let's continue here with another aspect of it. In 2 Chronicles, now we go to chapter 2 of 2 Chronicles. We are now with the days of Solomon. The temple is built. It's in existence. And so this is what we read about Solomon in the temple in chapter 2 and verse 4. We read, this is what Solomon is saying in his prayer after he selected the people to do this and that and the other thing. And he's speaking to David. And we read here in verse 4, "Behold, I'm building a temple for the name of the Lord my God, to dedicate it to him, to burn before him sweet incense for the continual showbread, for the burnt offerings, morning and evening." These are the morning and evening sacrifices. So these are the daily ones. As we read in Numbers 28, we have the entirety of these different occasions mentioned all in one chapter. In Leviticus 23, you do not find the new moon, but in Numbers 28 and then 29, you find the entirety of these occasions, appointed seasons that God commanded that his people come before him, and also all the individual sacrifices. And so he's saying here that he has done that. "I'm building the temple again for the name of the Lord my God, to dedicate to him." You see, it's not for the congregation, it's for him. "And to burn before him sweet incense for the continual showbread, for the burnt offerings, morning and evening, on the Sabbath, on the new moons, and on the set feasts of the Lord our God. This is an ordinance forever to Israel." You see? How many keep it to this very day? You see? If you want to enter into life, Jesus Christ said, keep the commandments. This is one of the commandments. A lot of people have no use for it. Why? Because they decide on their own which commandments they are going to keep and which commandments they are not going to keep. And so they say, you know, concerning this matter, well, we don't have a temple, we cannot offer sacrifices. That's true. We cannot do that. But how are the things that we can do? We don't say, well, we don't have a temple and we cannot offer sacrifices on the Sabbath and on the holidays, so forget about the Sabbath and the holidays. You see? Well, if you cannot say forget about the Sabbath and the holidays, why can we say forget about the new moons? They're all one package deal. They're all together. In almost every single statement you find this. You see? The daily, the Sabbaths, the new moon, and the feasts. You see? But in essence, we made a conscious choice. Forget about the new moon. We don't know what it means. It's not Leviticus 23. We don't need it. It's not necessary for salvation. Well, that's human. The people that fear God and tremble at his word don't think that way, don't act that way. So, when God tells us, grow in grace and knowledge and understanding, if you have no need before that, maybe it's about time people sit down and study this matter and do something about it. So when the time comes, they don't have to worry about what answer they're going to give to Jesus Christ when he proposes this question before them. What have you done by my new moon? You see? And so we go now to chapter 8 of 2 Chronicles, and we read more about it. In chapter 8, verses 12 to 13, this is what we read, again, about Solomon. "Then Solomon offered burnt offerings to the Lord on the altar of the Lord, which he had built before the vestibule." By this time the temple is erected. "According to the daily rate, offering according to the commandment of Moses," as we've been going through all this time, Israel was to do everything according to what God commanded Moses. And at the end time, Jesus Christ records that statement through Malachi, his prophet. "Remember the law of Moses, my servant." You see? The commandments that I gave him in Sinai and Horeb, and all the statutes, and that was for all of Israel. He said, you either remember that, or else, utter destruction. What did Jesus say when he came later on in the flesh? The same God who spoke through Malachi. Don't think that I came to do away with the Torah or the prophets. Any ordinance, any statute, any judgment, any precept, any testimony. You see, don't think that I came to do away with that. And people say, oh yes, you did. You know, we're now under grace. We live by faith. And some of us, all we need is just a spiritual thrill now and then, an experience, whatever it may be. Speaking in tongues, if you're in Pentecostalism, charismatic, sects, and things like that. Or just singing before God, feeling good, going home. Christ said, no, don't think that I came to do away with the law, the Torah, or the prophets. I did not come to do it. Until heaven and earth shall pass, not one jot or one tittle shall pass from the Torah. And this is one of them that we are reading here, that we are studying here. And hopefully there are those people who have ears to hear. And when Christ knocks on the door, they open the door and let him in. You see? So you can sit down with them and sup with them. Spiritual things. You see? That's what we're doing here. We're eating now spiritual things. And so this is what he says here. He did it according to the daily rate, offering according to the commandment of Moses, which actually God gave him, for the Sabbath, the new moons, and the three appointed yearly feasts, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Tabernacles. You see, they're all in one package deal. So, why do people say, well, okay, I'm willing to give the Sabbath, I'm a Sabbatarian, I believe in that, I see it all over the place. Others would say, well, I'm willing to go beyond that, I'm willing to keep also the feasts, but for the new moons, forget it. Imagine that, to stand before God and to say that. Well, a lot of people have been doing it. As a matter of fact, most of you listening are still doing it to this very day, and probably many of you are going to continue about your way, forgetting all about it. Well, then comes the judgment day, and we all stand before Christ, and the books are opened, and these instructions are going to be thrown in our face. And what are we going to do at that point? And so Solomon was a very obedient, at least at this point, to the path and the way of his father, to the commandments of God that were given to his father. And so this is what he did. He offered those sacrifices on all those occasions, and didn't say, well, let's forget about the new moons. As we read again in verse 14, what kind of a person he was at this point. And all that should give us an idea how we should be and how we were not all this time. And so we read about him. And according to the order of David, his father, he appointed the divisions of the priests for the service, the labor for the duties, to praise and serve before the priests. You see? And one of the things that they have done is on the new moon and the Sabbath and the holidays and on all the others. There's the duty of each day required, and the great gatekeepers by their divisions at each gate, for so David, the man of God, had commanded. How many of us realize that God continued to give commandments through different people, and people who did not obey those commandments were put to death? And if they were not at the time, they will be when the time comes. Because whether God commands through Moses or through David, or in person as it came, as Jesus Christ, or through his disciples, you see, it's all of God. And people who are rebellious and want to do their own thing, well, they're going to have the same fate regardless of who is the one that commanded those things. And so this is what we read here. He obeyed the voice of his father, the man of God. You see, a lot of people out there for the past many centuries and thousands of years like to pretend that they are the men of God, and give all kinds of instructions that are not biblical. And so it's important to know who are the men of God and who are the ones that can command you. And so in verse 15 we continue. They did not depart from the command of the king to the priests and Levites concerning any matter or concerning the treasuries. Absolute obedience to God and to his servants when they commanded. Whatever they did, whatever it was, in accordance with the law of God, not their own crazy ideas. So that's important also to prove all things. Because a lot of people, they just come supposedly in the name of the Lord, and all the false prophets of Israel. So as a matter of fact, the entirety of the prophets of Israel were all false prophets. And the only true prophets among them were the prophets of God, not the prophets of Israel. You see? A lot of people don't know that difference. You have to be a prophet of God before you can preach to Israel. And if you're just a prophet of Israel, it's neither here nor there. You're just speaking your own opinion. A lot of prophets of Israel, but only very few prophets of God. And David was a prophet of God. He was a man of God. Moses was a man of God. Elisha and Elijah and all the other prophets, you know, that God spoke through, they were prophets of God. They were not prophets of Israel. All the false prophets, and to this very day, are the prophets of Israel, the prophets of the people, self-appointed, generally. And that's reality. And so we continue now to 2 Chronicles chapter 31, where we read now about the days of Hezekiah. Again, another man of God, and therefore he could command, and people had to obey those kind of things, because what he did was by inspiration from God, not his own thing. Did not concoct his own ideas. And so we read about Hezekiah when he got all things in order. We read in verse 2, "And Hezekiah appointed the divisions of the priests and the Levites according to their divisions, each man according to his service. The priests and Levites were burnt offerings and peace offerings to serve, to give thanks, and to praise in the gates of the camp of the Lord." You see? The people of Israel were the camp of the Lord. And unfortunately, during the kings that were before him, there were a lot of unrighteous kings, and so people departed from the faith, and now he's in essence restoring them. And that's the reason why he's doing it here. And so this is what's happening here. And so he did all that to praise in the gates of the camp of the Lord. And basically the camp of the Lord in specific here was the temple, you see, but the people of God were called also the temple of God, holy priesthood, royal priesthood. And then spiritually speaking later on, certainly this concept is magnified upon, and that's what Paul's talking about. You're the temple of God. That was not a new concept, you see. The people of God were the household of God. His temple, the place where he inhabited. He inhabited the praises of Israel. You see? This is an old concept from the beginning of time. Some people think that's so-called New Testament teaching, and it's not. And so, this is what we read here. In verse 3, "The king also appointed a portion of his possessions for the burnt offerings," that's his own, beside now what Israel brings, "for the morning and evening burnt offering, the burnt offerings for the Sabbath, and the new moons, and the set feasts, as it is written in the law of the Eternal." You see? Earlier you read about the law of Moses. Here you read the law of the Eternal, because this is where it came from, originally. So you always see this package deal here of the daily sacrifices, of the morning and evening, all the Sabbath, all the new moon, and all the feasts. So the moon is the new moon is always there, right in the middle. And every one of these, beside the daily ones that were daily, obviously, the 6 days, all the others are all days where people did not go to work. You see, they stopped from work. So in that sense, they were all Sabbaths. There were the weekly Sabbaths, so they're called the Sabbaths. And then the new moons, also a day where they didn't go to work, but they had the assembly celebration. If they were at the temple, they went over there, you see, and they had their sacrifices, and then they went home and had the assembly celebration, and all the said feasts. So see, all of that was always together. Even though it does not appear, and that's in essence what the excuse that some people have developed in the past 50, 60 years, who came across this knowledge, they basically said, and obviously, they were not malicious people, they were sincere people. They had zeal of God, but as Paul said, you can have zeal of God, but not according to knowledge. And it's important to have the zeal of God and also knowledge. And as a matter of fact, an awful lot of people have zeal, and because they have no knowledge of God, they go haywire and do a lot of crazy things. Only the thing they're spiritual. And Satan, the devil, takes advantage of people like that, who are full of zeal. They are easy targets. So when we find out that we're these kind of people, that we have a lot of zeal and passion and desire to serve God, we better be very careful. We're the most dangerous, and we're the easiest target for the devil to use or to abuse. And unless we go to the Word of God, you see, and unless we subjugate our zeal and our passion and our desire to serve God to the will of God by studying His Word, so we know how to channel that zeal through His law, not apart from His law, to serve Him, you see, we're going to be in trouble. And many of us, unfortunately, are in that condition. That's in essence what happens with all the Pentecostals and Charismatic and all the others. People of great zeal, you know, they want to have a closer relationship with God, which is all nice and fine, but not according to knowledge. And so they're easy targets for the devil. And he uses them, and they do a lot of things. But these people are not going to be the full moon, because they're not attired with the sun, with the righteousness of God, with the truth of God, with the Word of God, with the commandments of God, with the commandments of Moses, of David, of others, you see, the men of God, of Christ when he came in person, well, he's the God of Israel, all of his disciples. This is not what motivates them. Just zeal, passion, desire, feelings, experiences, emotions, all those things, but forget about the law. And that's unfortunately how many function. And so, he that has an ear, let him hear. Be careful. That's what Paul is saying. You better be careful. Our Peter repeats that too, and several of the people of God, you know, our adversary, the devil, you know, is like a roaring lion. He seeks whom he may devour. So you've got to be careful. You see? And unless you study the Word of God day and night, you would know what is his will. And so you can be easily deceived. And you're going to hear voices, and you're going to be motivated and inspired, you know, and so forth. And you'll end up in the ditch. And you think that you are serving God. Well, that's what God told us. He's not interested in worship. He's not interested in people who praise Him and honor Him and glorify Him according to their will. You see? All that He said is vain worship. In vain do they worship Me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men, either their own commandments or that of others. Especially commandments of the devil, which they don't recognize that it is of him and the thing that it is of God. Well, you study the Word of God and you meditate on it, you study it, you know, and prove all things, and then you're going to be safe. But if you don't, obviously you would not. And so Hezekiah makes it very plain that all the things that he had done here and all obeyed him, because he was a man of God inspired by the Spirit of God, not his own. He's not doing his own thing. He was a man of great zeal, but his zeal was not according to human knowledge, but according to godly knowledge. So he subjected his feelings and emotions to God, to Christ. And that's what Paul says to the Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 10:5, I believe. It says that we must all bring everything into subjection, you know, casting down all imaginations, you know, our own opinions and thoughts and feelings, whatever it may be, our passions and desires, you know, to serve God. We must subject it all, you see, and bring it to the obedience of Jesus Christ. Because if we don't, we're going to have other spirits leading us by the nose, and we would think that it is God, and it's not. Many people fall for it. And they're more busy, you know, about feelings and thoughts and, you know, and experiences and thrills and things like that than about the study of the Word of God to know exactly what is His will. So they're not able to discern between right and wrong. But Hezekiah made it very plain. He had done all these things, you see, as it is written in the law of the Eternal. So he had to study that law before he could do all those things and tell the priests what to do and the Levites. It's not just that he sat down there and concocted that from his own mind or listened to another spirit telling him all kind of stories. And so this is what we read here. Verse 4. Moreover, he commanded the people who dwelt in Jerusalem to contribute support. He commanded them. Imagine that. The king. You know? He's a king. He's not a priest. But he can command. Why? Because he's done it according to the will of God. He can command in religious matters. And kings generally, that was not their business to do. But moreover, he commanded the people who dwelt in Jerusalem to contribute support for the priests and the Levites, that they might devote themselves to the law of the Eternal. Because when people stopped contributing to the priests and the Levites, in terms of the tithe and offerings and things like that, well, the Levites, had to go and make a living, support their families, so they could not study the law of God. So people were ignorant, and they were paying the penalty for it. And unfortunately, we have reached this point nowadays among many of the people of God where they couldn't care less about the law of God, about this matter or that matter or the other matter. And so this is where we find ourselves today, and we're all paying the penalty for it. Well, as God said, the heaven is my throne, you see, the earth is my footstool. In other words, you don't impress me with anything that you do. You know, you're jumping down, up and down, whatever it may be, all your good works and things like that. You know, your spiritual experiences, you don't impress me with that. He said, the only person that impresses me is a person that humbles himself, that trembles at my word. You see, that walks humbly. Isaiah 66, you read that, verse 2. And so a lot of people are not in this category, unfortunately, today. They do not tremble at the word of God. They do their own thing. And that's the reason why we have confusion among us. Well, anyway, that's something for the people of God to consider and pay attention to. Let's go now to a time that was in a glad time in the history of Israel, the history of Judah. They were just brought back from captivity by God, and they had leaders, Ezra and Nehemiah, and of course some other prophets too, Zechariah and Haggai and others. And so this is what we read Zechariah is doing here, and he was a righteous man, and therefore he also, being a priest, he commanded Israel to do certain things. And so this is what we read about what he did here in Ezra, chapter 3 and verse 3. He said, though fear had come upon them because of the people of those countries, you know, the people around, they were trying to intimidate them so they could not serve God and build his nation and city and temple and things like that. So even though that fear was there, they set the altar on its basis and they offered burnt offerings on it to the Eternal, both the morning and the evening burnt offerings. So they had no temple yet, but the altar was built. That doesn't take long to do it. So as soon as they have an altar, you see, you can begin the sacrificial system. In essence, one of these days, that's how they're going to start in Jerusalem, because this is according to the commandments of God. And you know, they have precedents and examples here to follow. Verse 4, they also kept the Feast of Tabernacles, as it is written. You see, as it is written, that statement you will see later on, many times repeated in the writings of the disciples, you see, in the Gospels, as it is written. And everybody knew where and who said it. Why? Because the people of Israel were generally very literate and knowledgeable of the law of God. And so all he had to say, just as it is written, and people knew what you were talking about. Now you go to most people and tell them that, as it is written, nobody knows what you are talking about, who wrote it. Where is it written? What is it written? And so it says here, they've done it as it is written. They don't need to tell you where. Everybody knows, Leviticus 23 and many other places. And they offered the daily burnt offerings in the number required by ordinance for each day. Didn't do their own thing. Afterwards, verse 5, they offered the regular burnt offering and those for new moons and for all the appointed feasts of the Eternal that were consecrated, and those of everyone who willingly offered a freewill offering to the Eternal. And so, you see, in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, that brings us about 500 years before Jesus Christ, where the new moon was still kept. There was no reason for them not to keep it, no more than there was no reason for them to stop keeping the Sabbath, you see, or the holidays. And so it was in the day of Jesus, and so it was in the church. They never had any reason to stop doing any of these things. And Christ made it very plain for them that they must continue to do it until heaven and earth passes away. You see, and certainly it didn't in their day, and it's not in our day. And so the law of God, the law of the Eternal, still stands. And a lot of people have very little respect for some parts of the law of God, because in their own mind they have decided what they should keep, what they should not. Let's go now to Nehemiah, another leader of Judah at that time, the captivity that returned, And he too discusses this matter. And so let's go to chapter 10 and verse 33, where we read, "For the showbread, for the regular grain offering, for the regular burnt offering of the Sabbath, the new moons, and the set feasts, for the holy things, for the sin offerings to make atonement for Israel, and all the work of the house of our God." So he's describing the service in the temple, the way it was set up, and all according to the law of Moses, the law of the Eternal. And you always see that. Regular offerings on a daily basis, Sabbath, new moons, and holy days. So first you see the daily ones, which happens on an everyday basis, then the weekly one, which happens on a weekly basis, and then you see the new moon, which happens on a monthly basis, and then you see the feasts, which happen three times a year, on an annual basis. But nowhere do you see all these things minus the new moons. So why do we see today in the congregations of God, the people of God? You see, that's a good question to ask ourselves. Where have we been all this time? And so this is what we read here. Let's go now to Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, where God is going to speak now about the new moon, in the sense that the people of Israel were not doing it really properly. And so this is what he's saying to his people in the days of Isaiah. And Isaiah was a prophet that was sent to the house of Judah. And his prophecies, you read in chapter 1 and verse 1, the vision of Isaiah the son of Amoz. Amoz means brave, courageous, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. So in specific, that vision was for Judah, because that was basically the kingdom that remained behind. Israel, later on in the days of Isaiah, was taken into captivity. And so the majority of his prophecy here throughout the book is concerning Judah, and also later on included Israel and the future Israel until the end of time. And so this is what we read here. As a matter of fact, this prophecy concludes in essence not only with the coming of Christ, but with the coming of the heavenly Jerusalem. And we'll get to that at the end. And so we read here in Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 13, this is what God says about people who had may have had passion, may have had zeal, but they were doing their own thing, you see. And they were not really obedient to God as they should have been. Their heart was not clean and pure. And so this is how God felt about what they were doing. And verse 12, let's continue, begin actually with from verse 12. And the entirety of the chapter is the words of God, the things that he does not like about his own people. He says, "When you come to appear before me, who has required this from your hand to trample my courts?" And this message is valid to this very day. A lot of people that come to services, God basically tells them, "Who asked you to come over here? You see, you despise my law. You just want to do your own thing." Many groups and organizations are all based on the fact that they do things that had nothing to do with what God told them to do. They just do their own thing to feel good. And they, you know, give themselves different names. But nowhere in the writings of the disciples would you find their name. And you can think about any given name, you see, where there is no mention of them in the epistles of Paul or anybody else. And yet they come supposedly before God. And here in specific it talks about the temple. That's applicable to anybody that appears before God. You see, when he comes to appear before me, whether in the temple or anywhere else, who has required this from your hand? Nobody asked you to do it. In other words, if you are not obedient to my commandments, to the law of Moses, the law of the Eternal that I gave him, I don't want you here. Get out of here. And so he says, "Bring no more futile sacrifices," you know, whether physical or spiritual. "Incense is an abomination to me." Well, incense is good. God created it to be sweet savor. But if the attitude of the people stinks, he said, "Your incense also stinks. And your praises and your worship are all in vain. And I'm sick and tired of it." That's what he's saying to the majority of his people to this very day, who call themselves the people of God
And yet they despise to one degree or the other the law of God. And so he continues by saying here, the new moons, the Sabbath, the calling of assembly, speaking about the holidays, so you see the three are together there. He said, I cannot endure this kind of iniquity and your sacred meetings, your new moons, and your appointed feasts, my soul hates. Now, the new moons are of God. The appointed seasons and feasts are of God. But they become theirs, the people, because they may have a zeal of God, but not according to knowledge, so they come to do their own thing. And God says, I cannot stand that. You're not doing it my way. You're doing it your way. And oftentimes they bring other spirits with them. You see? Because when we disobey God, other spirits move in. They are the ones that lead us into disobedience. A lot of people are not aware of that. And so you find people all around the earth. They call themselves Christians, whatever other names they want to take. You see? Even in the synagogue, it's all the same story. And then you find other nations, you know, they worship in other ways. You find a whole religion called Islam. You know, they think that they come before God and then they do their own things and speak their own things. And they go to outside and murder and butcher and take explosives, put it around their bodies and then explode people to bits and pieces. And then they come before God, you know, or the other people that supported them come before God, you know. Allah, they call him. You see? God in essence is speaking not only to his own people here, but to everybody. Because that's applicable to all. You know, that's the way you're going to behave. Get out of here. And so even the holy days that I gave you become to me a stench. I hate it. That's what he says to them. And so, well, this is a mention of the new moon in a negative way, but still nevertheless. Even when we obey God, keep the Sabbath, keep the holy days, keep whatever we do keep, if our hands are bloody, if we're disobedient, you see, as you read this entirety of the chapter, as it says here in verse 16, wash, he said, yourselves, make yourselves clean, put away the evil of your doings, which God obviously didn't command them, from before my eyes, cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, rebuke the oppressor, defend the fatherless, plead for the widow. A lot of people are not interested in that. They just want to come before God. That's the way they conceive of it. And they just want to have a beautiful experience, a spiritual experience. Feel good. Go home and do whatever they were doing before that. God says, I don't want these kind of people. Get out of here. You see? And so, that's another mention of the new moon. Unfortunately here, in a negative way. But nevertheless, God makes it very plain how he feels about it. And let's go to the end of the chapter. Obviously, that is the end of the book. There's an awful lot to say in between. And we don't necessarily to say everything here. Just to give us, as we said, a brief background of the new moons. And unfortunately, sometimes you find the good, the bad, and the ugly here. Mostly it's the good. In this case, it was the ugly. And it'll always be ugly when even obedience that we have toward God is not done with a clean heart. And so in chapter 66, we'll mention this one, then come back to it at the end, in conclusion. And this is what God says to his people at the end of time. In Isaiah 66 and verse 23. Now at this point, well, let's read from verse 22, because that'll give us the time setting. For as the new heavens and the new earth, as you read in Revelation 21:1, that's what I said, you know, this book of Isaiah leads us all the way to the end of the plan of God. At the end, in the sense, not just the coming of Jesus Christ, but also the ultimate, the coming of the heaven in Jerusalem. So it's really applicable to both. Mainly, the first one, when Christ comes, delivers all of his people. But also, it goes also for the second one. And so again, we read here, for as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, says the Eternal, this is Jesus Christ speaking here, so shall your descendants and your name remain, speaking by the children of Israel, and it shall come to pass. Now this is a command from Jesus Christ, the God of Israel, And this one is a command that has been given a long time ago. That's what we read here. It shall come to pass that from one new moon to another on a monthly basis, and from one Sabbath to another. And we're talking about the future. You see, we're talking about a law that has been done in the book since the days of old. It's nothing new here. And a lot of people in between didn't care much about it. Or God lays down the law. And it's not a new law. It shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh, not just some, all flesh, on a worldwide basis, his own people, and also all those who are going to be in the family of God as time goes by. You see, the people of God, all the nations who are going to be called by his name, all flesh shall come to worship before me. Those who are in Jerusalem will come to Jerusalem. Those who are in other countries will come wherever they are. You see, they will have an altar, as we mentioned that several times before. That are going to be altars of incense and altars of sacrifices on a worldwide basis. You see, they're going to have their own Levites and priests everywhere. Because obviously not everybody can come to Jerusalem, but they're coming before him. You see, all flesh shall come to worship before me. The whole world is going to keep the new moon and the Sabbath and the holidays and the Feast of Gladness and whatever other new Feast of Gladness are going to occur. Obviously, they're going to have a day of celebration remembering what Christ is going to do for them as he delivers them from the coming captivity and so forth. You see? And so God makes it very plain. All of them are going to come before me. So was it ever done away with, you know, this law? Isn't it exactly as it said? Don't think that I came to do away with the law of the prophets. I came not to do away with it. Heaven and earth shall pass, but not one jot or one tittle shall pass from the law. You know, be it big or small, whatever it may be, it doesn't make any difference. You see? And the new moon obviously has a tremendous importance for all mankind. They're going to begin life spiritually, just like the new moon, you know, a crescent, just barely visible, pale. And then as it grows in grace, knowledge and understanding, so to speak, that it receives from the sun, it grows bigger and it becomes full and complete and brilliant and beautiful and shiny, and it, all that comes from the sun. You see? She's attired with garments of righteousness. So that's the reason for the new moon. You see, it's not just, you know, something else to do. People have nothing to do. It's all spiritual knowledge and understanding and food. And Christ gave it to mankind from Genesis. That's when you read about it the first time. But the purpose of the moon, beside, you know, the physical things that it does, but the spiritual purpose of the moon, you see, that's what it is there. And people who didn't know that kept it. And as people departed from God, they began to have a sort of mixture of knowledge of truth and error in it. And so a lot of people were moon worshippers, but not in the right way, unfortunately. And so this is what Jesus Christ is saying here. Very plain words. It's not something for the Jews. It's not something for Israel. It's all flesh. So when are we going to start doing it? You see, until we start getting clobbered. You see, that's not a good time to do it. And so this is what we read here. And then we go now to the book of Ezekiel. The prophet Ezekiel discusses this matter also. And Ezekiel, when he studied the last 8 chapters, God gives us a lot of information in detail about the future of Jerusalem and the future of the services and the temple and the sacrifices and the priesthood and so forth. And so here we read in chapter 45 also instructions about this very matter. In chapter 45, we read here in verse 17. 45:17, we read, "Then it shall be the prince's part to give burnt offerings," the leader of Israel is called the prince, "burnt offering, grain offering, and drink offerings at the feasts, the new moons, the Sabbaths, and at the appointed seasons of the house of Israel." You see the 4 categories here: the feasts, new moons, Sabbath, and appointed seasons. In essence, as in other words we read earlier many times, Feast of Gladness.
that were not necessarily the three feasts or the seven annual Sabbath. You see, so there are four categories here: feasts or the days of gladness, and new moons, Sabbaths, and appointed seasons of the house of Israel. And this is what the priest, that is the leader of Israel, the president of Israel, the king, whatever you want to call him at the time, the prince, as he is called here, Nasi in Hebrew, which means the exalted one. And this is what he's going to have to do as he comes to the temple. And he's going to do it directly sitting at the gate, the east gate, where God is going to enter through, and he's going to sit before him there. And we're going to stop at this point again. Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.